For you guys who are regular viewers of the channel, you probably remember a couple of weeks ago, we had a wonderful conversation about the word misogyny. Thanks very much to a young lady on Instagram named Hannah, who thought she would express her discontentment with the way I was joking about marriage in one of my videos. This video inspired a lot of really good conversation in the comments, and it just so happened that over the last couple weeks, I have come across this female doctor, anthropologist, sociologist who has dedicated her life to studying female behavior. Oh my gosh, she is brilliant. I think her name is Dr. Dani Silowski. I believe it is. She's an Australian. I'll put a link to her stuff in the description, but man, we're going to get a whole new understanding of misogyny and misandry. For those of you who don't know, misogyny, by definition, is the hatred, aversion, or prejudice against women, usually by men. And misandry is sort of the female version, the hatred, aversion, or discrimination or prejudice against men. Now, you would think, as a thinking person does, that men are more likely to be misogynist, in other words, hating women, and women are more likely to be misandrist, hating men. Au contraire, my friends. There is so much more to this than meets the eye. In fact, by the time you get to the end of this video, you're gonna have a whole new view of the way this dynamic works in reality. This is Life 2.0. Let's talk about it. First, let's address the obvious. Men come hardwired, pre-programmed, and predestined to fall in love with women. There's nothing I could say or do to prevent that. This is a force of nature. Men sing songs, write poetry, climb mountains, do ridiculous things. Hell, we start wars to convince women that we love them and to force them to, or to entice them, I should say, to fall in love with us. We ruin our lives to impress women, to try to get their attention, to win their favor. So to say that men in general, or anything I could say or do, would entice men to not love women is silly. It's just absolutely silly. My mission is to inform men about the behaviors of women and how those behaviors are not what we would expect. And understanding them will give us the opportunity to make better decisions about the kinds of relationships we want to have with women. That's all. I'm not a misogynist. I love women. I have lots of women in my life. I have a better understanding of women now than I've ever had in my life, but I do not, by any stretch of the imagination, hate women or begrudge them any advantage that they have in life. You know, they are, do everything that they deserve. However, men really aren't the culprits here when it comes to misogyny. In fact, woman-on-woman hate is much more common than men-on-woman hate. Yes. And there's science to back it up. We've all suspected it. We all see how women sabotage each other, you know? How if one woman is experiencing some level of setback in her life, she wants to drag other women into it, convince them that this is the best path forward. That's why divorced women try to get other women to get divorced. They don't want another woman to be happier than they are. I don't know why that is. I don't understand it completely, but there is something to that. And as it turns out, there is some legitimate science that gives us some insights into why it is women behave this way. Why do they go to such extents to take out the competition, if you will? So just like with most scientific experiments, you've got to start with a hypothesis. And based on observational data, the scientists decided that the hypothesis was that women of a certain level of attraction wanted to eliminate perceived competition from the dating pool, regardless of whether they were directly a competitor or not. Just the mere fact that they existed made them a problem for them, a competitor. And they would do anything in their power to undermine this person's ability to give sexual signals on the dating marketplace. So what they did is take these women and they put them in a fake hair salon situation. And they, despite the fact that these women all had beautiful, very sexy, long hair, women who believed that these women were competitors at the same level of sexuality as them would advise them to bob their hair, even though these women suggested that they only wanted to have a very small amount of hair taken off. And these other women would try to convince them that by bobbing their hair that they would benefit from that there would be all these upside to it. Now, hair is a sexual signal that women give to men, consciously or unconsciously. And when long hair is down, it's usually a sign of sexual availability. That's generally the signal. That doesn't happen all the time. Just because you see a woman with her hair down doesn't mean she wants to bang you. It just means that she is being in a more enticing kind of vibe. But if you bob the hair, well, now there's no signal that can be given. So if a woman is, for example, in a sexual situation, let's say she's on a date with a man and she's trying to attract him, it's more likely that she's going to have her hair down. But women with bobbed hair don't have this option. Now, women who are extremely beautiful, I'm talking like nines and tens, these women that are off the charts, they have lots of sexual signals that they can give to men. So bobbing their hair is not that big a deal. And in fact, it has been suggested by these scientists that women who are movie stars and actresses and, you know, and really at the top of the food chain when it comes to sexuality will frequently get their hair bobbed to create a trend among the proletariat, if you will, of women, yeah, that they'll all get their hairs bobbed too. Now, these top-of-the-line women, these high-value women, we'll call them, they realize that they have the ability to give sexual signals to men on many different levels because they've got beautiful figures, you know, their beautiful faces. So their hair being bobbed or being long is a secondary signal for them. They don't depend on it. While women who are not quite as attractive will depend much more heavily on the length of their hair to give signals to men. And so when this entire population of women, a large percentage of them, decide that they're going to bob their hair, they've basically just taken them out of the sexual dating pool, if you will. They just eliminated an enormous denominator in this entire equation. They have devalued the dating pool, which in turn has resulted in their value increasing. And the same thing happened in the hair salon. All these women with a relative similar attractiveness, almost to a woman, suggested to a woman of similar attractiveness that she should get her hair bobbed, even though that woman who came in for the haircut really just wanted a trim. So the reason for that, the scientist, you know, came to understand, was that they were trying to eliminate this woman as competition on the sexual marketplace, trying to take them out. Even though this woman was not necessarily directly a threat to them in their own lives, just their existence made them a threat on the whole. Now, just think about the level of hatred. I mean, that's not even conscious hatred. That's subconscious hatred. That's hatred that goes so deep that it's ingrained in your behaviors. That's the kind of hatred that is instinctive, you know? So when women turn around and call men misogynistic because we tell jokes about women or we complain about their behaviors from time to time, our jokes are about their behaviors. You know what I mean? It's about the way they're acting. It's holding them accountable for something that they've done. The behaviors that these women in this salon, in this experiment, and generally when they're in competition with other women, this is much deeper. This is much more profound. This is a deep level of misogyny. They want to take them off the table. They want to take them off the playing field altogether. They want them eliminated as a threat, at least for a while. Think about that for a moment. The same phenomenon can be observed in women's fashion. Debu, stay here. Don't go anywhere. You just stay here. Have you ever noticed how frequently women's fashion trends, especially if you look at like the newest stuff on the Paris runways, and, you know, and every year they come out with all this stuff. From time to time, I'll watch one of these runway shows, and when it pops up on TV, And it's hard not to recognize that the women are beautiful. I mean, they're all just, you know, skinny and they're tall and they're gorgeous. But the clothes, you gotta stop and look at them and go, what the hell? I mean, who thought this up? I mean, this looks like some kind of geometric puzzle. I mean, what the hell is going on here? I mean, some of these things just look absolutely absurd and crazy. They would not look good on anyone else except these women. And maybe not even under any other circumstance. Maybe just under this circumstance does this even look reasonable. But putting this on some, you know, short, chubby little woman in America, you know, who's going to Burger King to pick up a meal, and she's sitting there wearing one of those crazy upside down triangles, you know, on her hips and a big floppy hat on her head, well, she's going to look like some kind of a moron. She's going to be absolutely ridiculous. Yet, frequently we'll see that. Frequently we'll see women that are not size zero wearing clothes that are designed for women that are size zero. And they spent a lot of money to acquire these clothes. So why is that happening? Well, these scientists came to the conclusion that especially women designers want to create clothes that look really, really good on women like them, that are slender, they're little, they're beautiful, and the clothes are so absurd that they would only look good on people like them. And so when the other women in the world go out and buy these clothes, who are not size zero and are not, you know, little skinny things, well, they look absurd. They look crazy. They look unattractive. And so we're literally taking out an entire class of women who would buy this stuff. We're removing them from the playing field altogether because they're just not that attractive. Interestingly enough, the same goes for makeup, especially women who wear tons and tons of makeup. In a study, they found that high-value men don't really care about makeup because they're looking at high-value women, and they know that high-value men are going to wear it anyway. But the high-value women are wearing makeup because they are beautiful and they know it doesn't matter. They can do whatever they want. The vast majority of men are not drawn to women who wear large amounts of makeup or even bold makeup. If they like makeup at all, it's relatively subtle. Yet, women look to these really beautiful women, these extraordinarily beautiful women, and see that they're wearing all this stuff on their face, and they think that they can get away with it. Now, if you are fabulously beautiful, you can do anything you want. Let's just get clear about that. You can wear anything you want and get away with it. But for the average woman, you know, who's, let's say, a 6'7", you know, she cannot get away with that. She needs to appeal to men in a more authentic way. If you look like a clown and you're a 6 or a 7, you just drop to a 4 or 5. You know what I mean? But they don't realize that. And they are trying to follow the trend set by these extraordinarily beautiful women once again. And again, these beautiful women are just sabotaging them. And I always said, a subconscious level, it's not something that they're doing with intention, at least not that the scientists were able to address or determine, but certainly on some very deep subconscious level, sabotaging entire populations of women is something that women will do to one another instinctively. They will just do it without even consideration, you know? While men, like, worst case scenario, we might objectify a woman by whistling at her, you know, as she crosses a street or a construction site, you know what I mean? We might call out a woman for being an idiot, you know? But for the most part, most women don't hate, I mean, for the most part, most men do not hate most women. We might hate a woman, you know, we might hate our own ex-wives, you know, we might hate our female bosses, but that doesn't mean we're misogynists. It just means we're human beings and we have emotions and thoughts and psychology and all that stuff. We react to things, but that doesn't mean that we are hating all women. But what's happening with women at a very instinctive level, I mean, this is primal stuff. They are literally wanting to remove the competition from the sexual marketplace on a population level, you know? They don't want any competition, and they will do anything in their power to eliminate that other competition. So when you think about it, who really are the misogynists here? And this is where feminism makes its appearance. Yes, feminism, feminists, the original feminists, they recognized a lot of these behaviors in women at an early stage. And now when feminism started, it was a movement to help provide equal opportunities to women. And this movement was very successful in the 1965s and 1970s, 1960s and 70s, and to some degree in the 1980s when it, you know, sort of permeated the workplace and we had all these human resources departments popping up and everyone had to be more careful about what they said and who was going to be offended and all that stuff. But anyway, so feminism has evolved from a movement to an ideology. It's like a mind virus, and this ideology has so much power in our culture that it polices almost without effort people's conversations, the way they think, the way they act. So if you're going to be critical of female behavior, it's very important, and I've done this myself and I've noticed it in my own videos, that you can't say anything negative about feminism as a whole. You know, you've just got to talk about the one person's behavior. So you've got to add a caveat to almost any conversation that you have that is critical of a woman or a group of women. The conversation might start like, now I'm a feminist, but I have this problem that I need to point out that may not be beneficial to women or men for that matter, you know. But we've always got to caveat this thing, especially women. Women have to be extremely careful about policing their conversations when it comes to being critical of other women, because if they don't put themselves on the correct side of this issue and identify themselves as being pro-feminist, and they say anything negative about feminism or other women, they will find themselves being exiled from the community. Now, women are critically attached to acceptance and external validation. This is an enormous part of their identity. And getting consensus from other women is very important in their day-to-day lives. You go back, you know, tens of thousands of years and women would be out gathering together. And so they would work as a group to accomplish goals in ways that were similar to men, but different, where men would be more, you know, in smaller groups and the goal would be more specific. Women were much more defensive, in a much more defensive circle, I should say. That's probably what it was. Men were being more aggressive and offensive. But so because of this programming that they have, and in this defensive circle, no one wants to be outside of that defensive circle. So if you, say, as a gatherer, you know, from 20,000 years ago, were excluded from the defensive circle, you were in danger of being eaten by an animal or taken by another tribe or something like that, you know. So staying within the group is critical, is absolutely critical. And anyone who says anything about feminism that is not in alignment with the, you know, the meme, with the ideology, well, they may find themselves exiled outside of the circle. And if that happens, there is no level of cruelty that can be compared to what those women will do to that woman. The women inside that circle will ostracize her, alienate her, they will humiliate her, they'll destroy her reputation. They will do everything and anything in their power to undermine her at every corner. Now, this can be seen in small social groups, like at, you know, in high schools and colleges. It can be seen in offices and workplaces. It's so fundamental to the way women behave that these scientists picked up on it right away. They could see that this level of acceptance was required by all the women. When privately they might say to people they could trust their true ideas and beliefs about a particular topic, say feminism in particular, when in the company of a group of other women that they did not know quite as well, they would not speak up. They would not voice their opinion because they were afraid that that group of women would ostracize them from the group and they would be they'd be shunned, they would be vulnerable, they would be their reputation could be damaged. This is really, really interesting because what it does is it creates an environment of oppression, is basically what it does. Women oppress other women at every opportunity to try to keep them in line with the, you know, the standard or the accepted meme or ideology about what is true and should be true for women. Now, what's really interesting about this is that most women have at least some issues with feminism as a whole. Yet most women are afraid to speak their voices. Only a very small percentage of women have very strong opinions in favor of feminism. And yet this small percentage of women seem to control the entire group. It's very much like our politics today, where it's the extremists who seem to set the agenda for the rest of us. So those of us who are in the middle feel like we've got no home in a political party anymore because only the extremist voices are being heard. Well, the same is true with the ideology of feminism. Only the extreme voices are being heard. And as a result, the more nuanced voices and those people with a more moderate opinion or maybe even an opposite opinion, their voices are drowned out because of the fear of exile, the fear of oppression, the fear of having their reputations destroyed. That's why when this whole Me Too thing popped up, you know, like what, 7, 8 years ago, and every woman in the world was jumping on board, you know, that's an example of how women can use the power of this oppression to create an agenda and even a, they can even create almost out of whole cloth a need for an entire gender of men to apologize to women, even though the vast majority of us did nothing at all. Like, we did nothing. We have nothing to do with it. We don't know what you're talking about. Like this guy Harvey Weinstein and whatever he did, you know, like that had nothing to do with me. I wasn't pissing in plants. I wasn't, you know, trying to coerce girls into bed in exchange for jobs. No. And the vast majority of men didn't do that either. And the vast majority of men didn't even have that thought. Didn't even cross their minds. Did not even cross their minds. And yet, we all suffered for it. Believe it or not, feminism is absolutely misogynistic. Feminism is openly hostile to female reproduction. And in fact, it's openly hostile to any form of maternity and the desire for women to have more traditional lives. Having babies, having families. This is an anti-feminist movement, you know? They, feminists encourage women to push off having children until after they've established themselves in a career, and generally thinking that most women should not even be considering marriage until well into their 30s. What this does is it closes the fertility window for a lot of women, and it narrows it for the rest of them. This is not a pro-woman, pro-maternity approach for women. And women who do go the opposite direction, and they get married when they're relatively young, and they have families when they're young, well, these women are seen as being uneducated, not very smart. You know, they are sort of on the outside, they're ostracized. You know, and this whole trad wife thing, you know, they all kind of snicker about it behind everyone's back, you know, that they're doing this. What's interesting, though, is that when you talk to women one-on-one about this whole trad wife thing, and you talk about them baking and taking care of kids and stuff like that, there's a large percentage of the female population that thinks that lifestyle, it looks really, really attractive. But they feel afraid or unable to take steps in that direction for fear of being labeled as something other than approved, you know, by feminism, by the group. That they would be ostracized, they would be oppressed in some way, their reputations would be destroyed because they're not falling in line with the sort of the communal meme of how we are supposed to live our lives as women. Very interesting, very, very interesting. What's really fascinating is that feminism kind of co-opted the whole trans movement, you know? They sort of brought this group of people into their community. And it's really fascinating because it doesn't make any sense. You know, first of all, the trans community is a fraction of a fraction of 1% of the overall population. So we're talking about a very, very, very small sliver of our overall population. Yet, if you were to watch media these days, you know, public, you know, mainstream media, you would think these people make up like a quarter of our population, you know? And the same thing goes with homosexuality. There's nothing wrong with it, you know? I mean, I think that people are just that way, they're that way. I've got no strong opinion one way or the other about it. I don't think anyone should be ostracized or should be penalized for their sexual whatever. But it's so dominant now in mainstream media that you would think that every third person is gay. And they're not. And they're just not. pronouns. This is one of the ones that really gets me, is that the trans community decided that we all, the other 99.99% of us, needed to conform to their need to be identified in conversation correctly by a pronoun. And so now, anytime you fill out a form or you sign up for a website, they're asking you for your freaking pronoun. Isn't that fascinating how, talk about the tail wagging the dog here. I mean, we're talking about such a tiny sliver of the population, and yet we have literally bent over backwards to accommodate this tiny, tiny, tiny little sliver. You know, now feminism did this. It was not the transgender community themselves. They may have asked that to be done or whatever, but without the megaphone, without the amplification coming from feminists, would that have been possible? So why is this happening? First of all, most men kind of get the heebie-jeebies around men who become transgender. You know, I mean, it's just not one of those things that most men are really in tune with. Especially if you're on dating apps. And I've had this happen a few times. So fortunately, I've never gone on a date with one. But I've been looking at a picture of what I thought was a woman and thought, well, she's pretty hot. Oh my God. Can't believe I'm saying this online. You know, oh, she's looking pretty hot. And as I'm, thankfully, I have the sense to read before I swipe. And I'm going down through her profile. And it pops out, oh my God, trans. This is a dude. What the hell? How is this even possible? This cannot be true. This is like from the hot crazy matrix. Oh my God, this is one of those. This is below a 4 and up at a 10. How does that even happen? But yeah, he, she, beautiful. I gotta give her credit, beautiful. But man, I almost swiped on that. And it did kind of give me that sensation of what if I had found myself in a bad situation and suddenly everything's going really great on this date. You know, I'm buying in. I'm not understanding what's going on here. At the end of the night, she wants to take me to wherever and we're going to have some fun. And I'm thinking, I have still got it. I still got it. And then we get to the moment of truth. And oh my God, we got the same equipment. What the hell? What on earth am I doing here? Anyway, I think that the reason why women have co-opted the transgender community is exactly for that reason. It gives men just a little bit more hesitation, and having women identify in some way with this transgender group kind of puts men off a little bit. You know what I mean? It does definitely kind of put us off. And maybe they see that guys can make a lot of very attractive women. I don't know. But it's definitely an interesting thing that they have co-opted this group and made them a part of their agenda, because it's very, very off-putting for most men. In addition to being hostile to women's reproductive rights, feminism has done a really good job of co-opting a certain percentage of the male population. We men, you know, we're pretty motivated by sex, and we just have to own that. And that's just biological, you know, it's not something that we're choosing. It's not like we're waking up every morning and having the thought, oh, I think that maybe I'm gonna pursue sex today. No, that thought does never occur to us. We are just biologically programmed to do it. We come that way. We're hardwired this way. And women think that we're making some kind of a decision about it, but it's not that. Anyway, that motivation to engage in sex requires that we find women. And sometimes in order to find a woman who is willing to engage in sex with us, we are going to have to learn to communicate with her at her level. You know, we're gonna have to understand the way she thinks, and we're gonna have to become part of her worldview. And oftentimes that means conforming to ideas and thoughts that we may not completely agree with. And so is born the beta male. These are men who are willing to sacrifice their values, their belief systems, and their dignity even, in order to have a relationship with a woman. Now, sometimes these guys are called F-boys because they will do anything to get in the sack with a woman. You know, sometimes we can just call them beta. They don't have the self-confidence to approach a woman as their authentic selves. And as a result, they bend and break their own value system in order to accommodate this woman. And so they end up buying into feminism. They end up becoming supporters of feminism. They're the ones out there holding the signs on the streets during the protests in favor of feminism. These guys are the pro-feminist extremists who help amplify the messages that eventually lead to the demise of their own relationships, and they don't even realize it. That they are creating the groundwork that will lead to their wife, their girlfriend, whoever, getting fed up with them and leaving in the long run. Spiritual and philosophical and technologically advanced we can be, at our roots, we are still organisms, we're animals, we're in these meat bags. And these meat bags have a certain amount of programming that comes with them. And the function of these meat bags for most of our history has been to reproduce. That has been the primary, singular, most important thing that we do is reproduce. And so everything about the way we are built is designed to do exactly that. Men and women, not just men. There are certain characteristics about men that are authentic, normal, and natural. And there are certain characteristics about women that are normal and natural. When those characteristics are evident, they're not covered up by society, culture, you know, ideology, they work really well. They function just like that, you know? But when you start turning and twisting and bending people's behaviors to accommodate an ideology like feminism, so that women are becoming more and more masculine in their behaviors and are becoming less and less maternal and less interested in reproduction, and men are trying to seduce these women by bending their behaviors so that they will be more and more acceptable to them by buying into their feminist ideology and approving of their behaviors or their male masculine behaviors and accommodating their lifestyles in order to win their favor, to get their approval. Well, what we've done is we've destroyed the balance of nature. We've destroyed the balance of, you know, gender dynamics. We've taken away what actually works and we've made it worse. We've taken a system that worked perfectly and we've broken it. And now what we are seeing are birth rates crashing worldwide, divorce rates skyrocketing worldwide, people not getting together anymore, dating apps or dating as a whole is a dead institution. It's just dying slowly, I should say. It's a dying slowly institution. And the dynamics, the relationships between men and women as a culture and as individuals has never been more twisted and difficult than it is today. I think that feminism, and I'm not talking about the feminism of the 1960s and 70s about equal rights and opportunities, but the feminism of today that has this ideological agenda to be hostile against women's reproductive rights, to create this oppressive environment that keeps women in line and behaving in the way that they need them to behave, pushing women to choose careers over families, to shorten their window, and then exploiting those natural women female behaviors of competition and group dynamics and exclusion, taking women off the sexual marketplace, you know, on a population level, and convincing them that this is what's in the best interest. And even though the individual women can see that this is all screwed up, that this is wrong, this is out of line, that this is not the way things are supposed to be, because of the power of the group, these women are afraid to speak up. They're afraid to make their voices heard. They're afraid to tell the truth that they know in their heart is what needs to be heard. So how does all this apply to Hannah? Let's get right back to that, you know? So 2 weeks ago, Hannah calls me a misogynist because I make some jokes about women on a video. And it created a great conversation in the comments, you know? And you guys were throwing out words like misandry and calling her a misandrist. And misandry is, of course, like I said earlier, it's the women hating men. But here's what is really interesting. And I'm not arguing that she's not a misandrist, but I think that in reality, Hannah is a misogynist. Hannah truly, without even knowing it, hates women more than she hates men. And her behavior online is a peacock kind of thing, where she is trying to show her feathers to other women that she's standing up for the cause. You know what I mean? Like she's, you know, one of the group. She's carrying the flag for the ideology of feminism. That's her thing. And as she does that, she's signaling to everyone else that they need to fall in line, that there is a pecking order here, and she's trying to kind of lead the way. She's trying to push the agenda forward. She's reinforcing the meme over and over and over again. Now, she's a young girl. You know, she doesn't know all this stuff. She's completely unaware of it. She wasn't around in the 60s and the 70s. Hell, she wasn't even around in the 90s. From what I can tell, Hannah is a very young woman, probably not very well educated when it comes to cultural, societal issues. But she's doing it anyway. She's being oppressed into it. She doesn't even realize she's being oppressed into it. Because if she had an original thought, if she had an insight into any of the things that I've just talked about, and she's probably experienced it. As a woman, I am sure she's experienced the fear of being ostracized, of being oppressed by other women. And she's probably sensed women taking her out of the dating marketplace by encouraging her to do things that make her look stupid or less attractive, or even worse, you know, just being mean girls and just pushing her out just because you see her as a threat. If she were to tie all this together and understand the reality of what's going on, Hannah would be a subscriber of my channel. Because she would see that what I'm doing here is the good work of the Lord here. You know, I am out there just preaching the good word. I'm trying to get people to understand that the only way we unravel this whole mess is to do away with these ridiculous ideologies. You know, it's not about hate. No, it's about accountability. It's about being a good person. It's about improving yourself each and every day and reaching out to people and trying to help them become better people as well. So I'm reaching out to you, Hannah. I would like for you to perhaps have a conversation with us about misogyny and misandry and how it's affected your life. Because I've got a feeling that you, without even knowing it, have been oppressed by this ideology your entire life. In fact, it's so part of your person. It's just part of the fabric of who you are. You know, it's just what you believe to be true. It's just the water in your fish tank. You have no idea that it is affecting you in such a negative way. And there are women just like her all over the place who are so indoctrinated into this ideology that they have no idea how destructive it is, not only to themselves, but to all of us. All right, you guys, that's all I got for you today. I hope you've enjoyed this video. If you have, please like and subscribe. If you know someone who might enjoy it, please share it with them. In the meantime, stay healthy, and if you can, stay single.